Welcome to Near Death Experience Podcast. I'm Chaz Hathaway. I'd like to apologize for the break that we've taken for a time, but I do want to express deep gratitude to each of you who reached out to me and said, please keep doing the podcast. That's what brought it back. And I can go into more detail, you know, about why I paused for a time later, but there are some technical things that I'm still working on, and I will be moving the URL to the website, or the website URL will change soon. But in the meantime, I don't have any reason to not continue doing this when so many of you are listening, and I deeply appreciate you're reaching out to me. It's what, like I said, keeps me going. So today's near-death experience can be seen on both NDERF.org, or you can Google or do a YouTube search for Sarah's near-death experience from Art Bell's Coast to Coast AM 1999. So this is from the Coast to Coast program where Art Bell is interviewing her. However, what I'm reading is from NDERF.org, and I believe it's compiled from that program, and it's without all the interviewer interruptions, which are plentiful in the program. But there is more detail in there if you'd like to go and hear more about it. And I want to warn you too, this, if you're not familiar with near-death experiences, begins with a pretty severe distressing aspect to the near-death experience. There is a term, distressing near-death experience, or DNDE, that applies to near-death experiences where something awful happens in that experience. You know, there's so much of light and love and just overwhelming compassion and so forth, that you might think by simply reading a few of these that everybody's experience is utterly bliss the entire time, which is not accurate. And although these distressing near-death experiences are somewhat rare, let's say 10 to 20% of people experience something distressing about their near-death experience, I have not yet heard one where this person in distress, having called out to God for help, did not receive it. So it's not like this person is doomed for eternity to be in this horrible state. Now, there are some that it begins and then they pop back in their body before there's even a chance for figuring out even what's going on. But those who have a long experience, it always ends up, if they call out to God for help, He always comes in. And we have briefly talked about that, but I bring that up here because this is one of the kinds of experiences that you might listen to this and say, whoa, wait a minute, this is like worse than fire and brimstone. But recognize that we're sharing these things in order to understand, in order to learn, and also recognize that that Sarah, as Sarah demonstrates, it's not a place that is permanent for these people if they choose for it not to be, at least in these experiences as I've read them. And I'm sorry for that huge introduction. Let's get right to it. In August of 1989, I was bicycling home from a volunteer position around 10 p.m. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. She's bicycling, truck hits her, okay? I don't want to go into the details of the gore and things of what happened to her body, but she goes on. This is what I remember. One moment I was riding my bike, and the next, I was in a place of complete darkness. I had no sense of direction or perspective, but I did have an awareness of my body. That is, I still had one. Off in the distance, I began to notice a hum and a pinprick of light. the sound began to grow louder, and the light seemed to be coming toward me. As the object drew closer, I noticed that it was a fantastic demonic creature surrounded by flames, with huge eyes and teeth. It danced toward me, slavering and growling. There was menace in its gaze as it smashed its teeth and stuck out a long, slobbering orange tongue at me. I was riveted to the spot in the dark where I stood. There seemed to be nowhere to go to avoid the thing as the creature was advancing at an increasing speed, determined to intercept me. I stood my ground and closed my eyes, expecting to be engulfed in flames or devoured or both. Instead, I had an awareness of the creature slowly passing painlessly through my body, and I turned an inward eye to it, only to discover that the creature was laughing with glee as it melted through me. It exited with a pop behind me, and suddenly I was flying forward very fast through the dark. As I flew, two more of the demon creatures came toward me, displaying different colors but still fearsome. Armed with my knowledge of the first one, I allowed these beings to approach and pass through me. Soon I came to the entrance of a tunnel in that black. The tunnel seemed to be constructed of gray cloud-like material and wound far away and up to the right. Then it branched, and I couldn't see where it led. From the branching on the right extended a yellow-white light that helped to softly illuminate the tunnel. I glanced downward at myself and noticed that my body was gone. It had been replaced by a blue-white sort of equilimbed cross star that pulsed. This seemed natural and pleasant to me at the time. It was very freeing to no longer be attached to a weighty form. Looking back into the tunnel, I noticed there were doorways in both sides of the structure. A few other cross/stars were wandering about the tunnel, some blue like myself, some amber-colored. Two other blue cross stars appeared beside me and gently propelled me into the tunnel. I floated along and up, observing that some doorways were open while others seemed to have been shut. The first doorway I peered into resembled a classic hell. There was the sound of shrieking and agonizing screams. Naked human beings were strewn about a blasted landscape with pools of bubbling excrement and jagged boulders. Devils and other animals were torturing people in all imaginable ways. The people were also torturing each other. As I neared the doorway to this sinister scene, I felt a sucking sensation drawing me in like a whirlpool, and I found myself flying above the miserable landscape. The smell was putrid and the heat was almost unbearable, but part of me was fascinated by the seemingly infinite varieties of pain and anguish that was being inflicted on the inhabitants of this realm. Most of me wanted to leave, so I had no difficulty, and my feeling was that anyone could leave if they wished. I felt that no one or nothing had put those people in captivity except their belief in the agony they continued to suffer. I flew back to the doorway, which was clearly visible from everywhere in the hell. I left with nothing but joy, but I still had a sense of myself as apart from that joy. The next doorway in the tunnel wasn't much better. As far as the eye could see, people walked on barren yellow ground with their heads down, completely engrossed in their own depressed, self-pitying thoughts, unaware that anyone else was around them. A great feeling of loneliness and isolation emanated from the scene, and I shied away from getting too close, although no sucking sensation was felt near this opening in the cloud tunnel. I flew along further up the tunnel and glanced in other doorways, but the next one that made a lasting impression on me was a world of almost indescribable beauty. I looked upon a beautiful wooded garden with fountains and waterfalls and streams and bridges that glowed and sparkled with iridescent colors. A close depiction of the beauty of this world has been captured by the artist Gilbert Williams, whose work I discovered several years after my near-death experience. A feeling of peace and harmony flowed from this scene, and I moved toward the doorway with a great desire to enter. As I began to go through the opening, my nose encountered what felt like plastic wrap webbing. I pushed forward, but was gently rebuffed, and a voice said, "You do not have the information to enter this world." At the time, I remember feeling disappointed, but not judged as unworthy, just uninformed. I then turned my attention to the light that was glowing around the fork to the right. I entered into the light and was transformed by a feeling of utter, absolute joy. There was nothing but joy. I said to the light, "I'm here." And the light said, "Great," in a voice that rang with happiness and bliss. I gave myself up to the bliss and learned many things that sound corny when described, but are truths for me that resonate through me now and forever. I learned that I am eternal, and though I may experience many forms of death, I will always know who I am. I have nothing to fear, only more to experience, and I am the one that ultimately chooses what I experience. It sounds hokey, but believe me, it feels really, really good to know that to know these things inside yourself. Eventually, I became disenchanted with the eternal bliss and decided to leave. I said to the light, "I'm leaving." And the light said, "Great!" continuing its utter joyous and blissful existence, unaltered in any way by my presence. I floated back down the tunnel, glancing about me in continued wonder, eventually settling on the threshold of a doorway that looked into outer space. Pieces of rock floated by, and in the distance, planets and galaxies spun and whirled. A rather conflicting feeling of both serenity and adventure surrounded me as I gazed upon the silent scene. The entrance to the tunnel was nearby, and I could hear voices shouting, "Don't go, Sarah! What about Zane?" My son, who was 5 at the time of the incident. I grew annoyed at these voices because I wasn't intending to go anywhere, and of course I was going to be there to watch Zane grow up. Another being appeared beside me, and we talked about my options. We heard a voice say, "If you pass through this door, you can't come back." My next conscious memory was of lying in a hospital bed with uncountable tubes sticking into me and a respirator tube in my mouth. I was full of joy and humming with power, although I was unable to move any part of my body of my own volition. I was also full of pain, and that sensation quickly oriented me to my physical self again. I have had to face many trials and challenges since my near-death experience, including complete loss of identity, disability, poverty, loss of friends due to their inability to understand how the experience changed me, and chronic pain. But the knowledge of the eternity of my spirit and the freedom from the fear of death have created in me a foundation of peace that no temporary physical condition can shake. I have a great wish that everyone could experience the wonders I have without having to suffer the trauma I did, for it would transform the world. Wow, I think there's a lot to be said here. First off, I mean, I have to admit, this is one when I first heard it, my skeptic radars went up. I mean, first off, seeing this, you know, going toward this light and and they're being, and it's a little bit unclear, but I think, because I did listen to this on the program, I think she's seeing the light, and this demonic creature is one she passes on the way to the light. Not as it sounds, that light turned out to be a demonic creature. I could be wrong about that. You may want to listen to the program. Maybe you'll get a little more clear idea of that. Because it sounded like she was trying to head toward the light, that she was heading toward the light, but she had no way of avoiding this creature on the way there. But that may or may not be really relevant. But you know, I'm like, she's headed toward the light, and there's a demonic creature, and then multiple demonic creatures sound like pretty terrible demonic creatures. And what in the world are these demonic creatures even doing here? I mean, if she was, you know, dying in the process of a murder or something, you know, I think the Christian side of me, the side of me that is very religious and so forth says, wait a minute, you know what, you know, and I don't know of her life before this instance, except that she was bicycling home from a volunteer position. She was obviously doing something of good in her life. And that's kind of beside the point, because from what it looks like, other than that initial demonic creature that passed right through her, laughing at her and so forth, she didn't seem to be enveloped into this hell that she ends up experiencing, because she goes to this terrible realm, and it's genuinely terrible. I mean, just the descriptions, I was even hesitant to read them because they're so obscene, but this is what she experienced, this is what she saw. And honestly, you know, this is not the skeptic in me now, but the judgmental person that I try to avoid being, but she describes this this fascination with the torture that's taking place. It kind of makes me think of people who love watching you know, terror movies, horror movies, and the horrible things that happen in them, and there's just this fascination with it. The thing that makes me wonder is, could it be her fascination with it that brought her to that? Because she doesn't want to be part of it per se, but she wants to see it a little bit. Part of her wants to see it. And I think the loving, deeper part of ourselves, while curious about, I mean, infinite things, doesn't generally enjoy any part of such suffering. I think that's something that we kind of pick up on this earth, probably as part of our mortal experience with all the suffering that happens here. That is probably where we develop this curiosity for horror, if you will. And it's my speculation, total speculation, I have no idea, but it's my speculation that it's her curiosity about this terrible situation that brings her into it. You know, she's headed, if she would have been focusing on the light, maybe she would have seen the demonic creatures. That's unclear. But after passing through them, I mean, she sees these various tunnels and so forth, and she sees some other beings of sort that are kind of saying, hey, come check this out. They're not saying it, but there's this sense of, you know, come check this out, you know. And she kind of follows them toward those different doorways. And gratefully, she's at least repelled enough to leave, because as she says, she didn't think anybody was compelled to be there. And in light of one of the previous episodes where the suicidal near-death experiencer is brought to this hell-like place and given an opportunity to leave it, and recognizing in her experience that any of them could leave, but they don't necessarily know they can leave, or they may need somebody to, you know, help them know how to leave, even though any of them technically can at any time. You know, there's that whole agency aspect. It seems like this is such a big thing with experiencers, is agency, choice. And yet there's so many things that they say, I was drawn to this light, I didn't seem to have any control over it. But if they are drawn towards something and resist it and genuinely strive to avoid it, they generally can. And they generally do. And ultimately, it often comes down to something in their mindset that put them, it's like they've lived this life where they were locked in this mindset that they could choose to walk away from, that they could choose to leave behind, but they've allowed themselves to be locked in it so long that when they get to the other side and they're in this situation, they are again locked in this hellish experience. Not because somebody is keeping them there or something is keeping them there, but that because they are keeping themselves there. And I think there's something to be learned from that. In terms of our lives here, because we are all in very difficult situations. I mean, let's face it, there's not one of us that doesn't suffer in some way. We have times of wonderful fulfillment and then times of terrible suffering. And we have all these things in between, and all of us experience very difficult times. I think we all are familiar with mentally locking situations where we really genuinely feel locked in our mindset, locked in our depression, locked in our, and I hesitate to use the word depression because I realize that there is a physical, psychological condition that can't just be turned off by choice. Okay, I recognize that. And I don't want to downplay that. But most of us, in most of our situations, are not locked down by chemical imbalances and other, you know, I shouldn't say that. The more I learn about mental and psychological and emotional disabilities and so forth, the more I feel like we've all got something, you know, and most of us have many things. It's just at what level. Now, so keeping that in mind, okay, we all have things about us that are broken. That's part of the mortal experience. And we're not expected to, don't worry, be happy, even though we're experiencing depression. It is very important for us to realize that however bad our situation, we still have choices. We still have agency. You may not be able to choose whether or not you experience pain, but you do have choice of how to handle it. It may not be a matter of choosing whether to ignore it. That may not be a possibility at this time. But it may be a matter of exercising compassion with others rather than focusing entirely on your own suffering. And in whatever form that is, it could be physical suffering, it could be emotional suffering, so forth. The point that I want to make is that I think this experience demonstrates a little bit of how these different ways that we think and feel and these situations we get ourselves in this life seem to be consistent with our lives on the other side. And for Sarah, she saw those different choices, those different experiences as doorways into these different realms. Now, were these different planes of existence? Were they realms where she could have touched and felt and seen? And I mean, she talks about the heat being overwhelming and the smells and things. I mean, that sounds pretty real to me. But are we talking about mind states that show as different for different people? I don't know. But clearly there is an aspect of the other side is not just bliss. It's not just bliss. There's lots of different things. And I think it's telling too that it's not either bliss or these various horrible experiences either. She saw this complete light where there was all these insights given to her about her life and her and her way of thinking and so forth. And there was also this beautiful garden place. And she talks about peeking through other doors, and then she'd be distracted by another one. Clearly, she is a very curious person. I'm not sure I would be as curious as she was, but I certainly consider myself curious enough that I would be wanting to explore that beautiful forest and the light and maybe talk to other beings and so forth. But which is kind of another point. There is not only room for, but encouragement of curiosity for spirits. You know, if we think we're just going to have all the answers and it's like, now we have everything. It's great now. And then just sit around in great joy for eternity. I don't think that's what it's going to be. I think there's going to be great joy, and there's going to be teaching, there's going to be learning, there's going to be experiencing. This life, this mortal life, is one of those experiences. Now, what are the other kinds of experiences? I don't know. I mean, we're only getting hints from these experiences. But I think that it's worth mentioning that there is not, it's not like this life is where the variety is. In a lot of ways, it's where the least variety is. But being in the situation that we're in, mortal, physical, I think one of our reasons for coming was to experience suffering, because we knew we would be able to learn from that and to recognize more deeply good from evil and sweet from bitter and, you know, pain from healing, or, you know, whatever the opposite of pain is, I guess, pain from joy and bliss, whatever. And because we can see those two sides more aptly, we have greater capacity for compassion and love. And isn't that the lesson that keeps coming up? The lesson of love. So, with that, I do intend to continue the podcast on a daily basis, Monday through Friday, and call me out on it if I miss, but that's going to be my commitment to you, that I will genuinely try to continue doing that. When I get the new website up, I will announce where it is, and hopefully it will be able to help me. It's going to be a WordPress-based site, because I know how to work with plugins and get the RSS feeds the way they need to be, so the description should show up properly, and we should be able to show a little more, it should show up better in order to make this podcast better visible to other people. And in light of that, if you are enjoying this show, and if you do want to encourage me, because I, as discussed, I have hard times too, and having experienced one of those times, I paused the podcast, and gratefully I'm feeling like getting back into it. But if you get on to iTunes and leave a review, okay, that is something that not only helps encourage me, but it will also tell iTunes, you know what, this podcast is one people like. So let's be sure it shows up in the search results. Let's be sure that when people come looking for podcasts about near-death experiences, they find this one. And so it'll help other people. So if it's encouraged you in any way, that's a way to encourage other people, is by making it more available by putting up a review on iTunes. I hate self-promoting stuff, so I'm not going to think of it that way. I'm going to think of it as it being a way to help other people. But once again, as always, thank you so much, all of you, for listening.